Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh James Show, and I was expecting this hour to talk to Walter Burian. And maybe I still will, I don't know. But Walter is nowhere to be found at the moment. It's just kind of interesting. John confirmed it as recently as yesterday with Walter. So hopefully nothing untoward has happened to him. And you know, with someone that possesses the explosive knowledge he does, it does lead you to wonder. Walter was the guy who many years ago uncovered the comprehensive annual financial report, and he'd never heard of it. And actually, this goes back to the end of World War II, where there is a different balance sheet for municipalities than the one we see. The one we see is a partial, and that's the one that makes it look like everybody's in terrible debt. But the reality is that most, if not all, of these municipalities, and certainly the federal government and others, have a bloody fortune in reserve that they're not telling you about. And of course, if they don't tell you about it, they can spend it as they see fit. They can also raise your taxes in the guise of need and everything else that you can envision. So we'll get a hold of Walter eventually, we think. Maybe next time we'll just throw him on the air when we reach him on the phone, yeah, rather than set it for a future date. So in the meantime, it's just you and me, kid. Emphasis on you, I hope. 610-640-6400, 610-640-6400. Got an email from Carl earlier who said he wanted to call and discuss Bettina from last night and what she had to say. I said, well, don't call in the first hour. We've got Walter. Well, Carl, if you're listening, first hour is up for grabs. You're more than welcome. In the meantime, I am beside myself with anger. It doesn't happen often for me that I get in a place where I react to the stories we talk about. And the reason that I make sure that I have somewhat barricaded myself emotionally is that there's just too many of these stories, and they are absolutely overwhelming. So, and I was just reading here, by the way, always a mistake to read email at the same time, but Matt wrote, and apparently some of you trying to download the Bettina Viviano interview, there's a problem. He says, no matter what I click on, it opens a new browser window. So when I download a show, I end with five windows open. I'll see what I can do. I don't know what the problem is, but I'll see what I can do. It'll probably be after the show, but I'll attend to it. So I know some of you heard it because I've gotten response. So some of you found some way to listen to it, possibly on the stream last night. I don't know. I digress. I'm getting away, obviously, from my point of ire, my anger, I was so mad I was shaking. And again, I steel myself against this stuff or it would consume me. But every now and then I'm caught off guard and I just get madder than a pit bull with PMS. I tell you what, that's right. Well, here was a headline that did it to me. Congress to receive Obamacare exemption. And of course, I immediately howl, no! Well, the reality is they may not get it, even though it's announced that they will, and I'll get to that. But just the hubris, just the idea, I am so ticked. Now, the deal is that when Obamacare was being discussed a few years ago, you'll remember that, back in the dark days of 2009 and 2010, the deal was that Charles Grassley stepped up and put forth the amendment saying that Congress will be covered by this too. Because the American people did not like the sound of Obamacare for absolutely any reason. That's right. We don't need to detail them because the answer is all of them. All right. So here comes the Grassley amendment, which says, well, Congress will have to live under the terms of the bill. And I say, hoorah, it should be one of the constitutional amendments. Congress should have to live under the terms of every bill. I don't think this should have to be an amendment. That should be the law of the land. Yeah, that and no unrelated items unto bills for discussion, and that they have to read every word of the bill they're voting on. Those three amendments right there would do away with most of the shenanigans. But no. So the Grassley Amendment was poised to tamper the public sentiment that you're not going to force this on us without forcing it on yourself. Now, of course, it can be debated whether this covers the rest of the federal workforce, the IRS, of course, trying to opt out. But there is absolutely no debate that it covers Congress because it explicitly says it. And so the idea that Congress will receive an exemption just frosted me. President Obama has agreed to what is ultimately a congressional exemption from Obamacare. The Office of Personnel Management now plans to rule the government can continue to make contributions to the health care premiums of the existing health policies of the lawmakers and their staff. Now, prior to the resolution, everybody was going crazy. All right. But now, so far, I haven't heard a whimper about this. And there sure should be. I'm going to talk about that later, and also maybe the good news that they can't do it, because that's possible. And I'm going to ask John to tell Carl to call back, because we, and I want to talk to you, Carl, but we apparently have Walter. All right, so, Walter, where were you? Walter? Well, maybe we don't. Let's see. There we are.
I'm here.
Okay, Walter, you're there. I'm here. We're together at last. Good to talk to
hello.
You.
Hello, Raleigh.
Yes, I was afraid perhaps the feds picked you up before the show.
No, I wouldn't let them do that before I could talk to you again.
Oh.
I mean, I would have fought them off to the end.
Aren't you sweet? We replayed all your old shows a couple weekends ago, right after the announcement that Detroit was bankrupt, because my thought was that Walter probably knows they're not. So I don't know if you've...
Can I make a quick comment regarding Detroit?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you had time to go over it, but I hope you did. So make all the comments you want about Detroit.
Yeah, the people are looking at what's being spoon-fed. And, oh, Detroit's $20 billion in the red. You've heard that a few times, right? $18 billion.
Yeah, we're gonna have to sell the art to try to repay this. Yes.
Yeah. Well, if you want to see how simply deceptive the whole show is,
mm-hmm.
what they're doing is projecting out their liabilities 35, 40 years, and that's where they're $18 billion in the red over 40 years.
Right.
And only projecting out their income 1 year.
Right.
So if say, for example, you made $100,000 a year, and you spent, $80,000 a year, okay? Well, if you projected out your $80,000 a year for 30 years...
Right.
Okay?
Right.
$2.4 million in the red. Oh, my God.
Right. And, that was self-evident, but when I saw that, I thought to myself, that's still not the whole picture, because
they're sitting on about $8.5 billion positive.
That's what I was getting at. When you look at the comprehensive annual financial report, that's $8.5 billion that they do not have to report. And for people who are not familiar with this wonderful scheme, the comprehensive annual financial report, this stuff goes back to the late 1940s.
Well, it actually gets a little better. There's something I've mentioned over and over again now since we've last talked, which I didn't say on your show.
Yeah.
And it's so important. Government was not supposed to operate at a profit. Well, the way they got around that pesky little rule, say, for example, a city, county, or state made $100 million for the year from any one of its operations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they have $100 million profit. Well, they're not supposed to operate at a profit. They either create a liability account or deposit $100 million into the liability account, and poof, there goes a profit now designated as a liability. And that's why you're seeing government promoting liability, liability, liability. because every liability they create, it gives them the ability to stash away cash and pull off money, deposit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the public, you know, has not, you know, been briefed on the reality of the scope and size in government. The reason they do this, you know, people, their first impression is, oh, if they have all this money and they're building up all these investment funds, how come they don't use it? You know, and, you know, that's kind of like someone saying, you know, sitting in the middle of the ocean in a rowboat saying, I know there's water around here someplace. if I keep looking, I'll find it.
Yeah,
you're in the middle of the ocean. Government, for every investment fund, which there's hundreds of thousands, small and large, every one of those investment funds is a power base where that money is invested, whose corporation's backed, whose real estate project is backed, domestic or international. If you and I were senators and we happen to find out this old-timer in Australia died who owned 400 acres on the beach just outside Sydney,
mm-hmm.
and his four kids, who are irresponsible jerks, just wanted to sell the property real quick, you know, to get a few mil in their pockets. You know, the property is, say, mm-hmm. worth, you know, $200 million, and they want to sell it real quick to get $30
million. Okay.
Well, we approached one of the fund managers who may be managing, $1.5 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion. There's multiple different funds. And we said, well, we need about $50 million to buy some property on the beach in Sydney, Australia, build a condominium complex resort. Can you fund us? And the guy goes, okay, yeah, but you have to present a prospectus, cover all points A to Z. You have to offer the correct rate of return that we're accepting right now, which, by the way, is 2.75%.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, here's three prospectuses we approved last year on similar projects. So he gives us the blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's conflict of interest laws. So we have, our two Indian accountants, Raja and Deja,
mm-hmm.
Establish a New Zealand corporation, New Zealand Coastal Properties Inc., and they put together the prospectus, you know, for the acquisition of the property and building of the townhome condominium complex mm-hmm. On the beach in Sydney, Australia. We have basically a behind-closed-doors agreement with them under the table. You know, they prepare the prospectus. It's presented. The investment's approved. We, you know, buy the property, build our condominium complex. It generates us now $10, $11, $12 million a year. Deals like that are cut 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Right.
And when you look at the collective, keep in mind there's about 184,000 local government operations, every city, every county, every school district, every enterprise operation, the financial institutions they've created for management of government funds. 184,000, each one putting together an annual financial report, each holding its own investments, separate from each other. You know, there's a little co-mingling
mm-hmm.
between different entities, but when you look at the collective local government and federal, which has about 20-some-odd thousand different operations, the collective total is about a very conservative $110 trillion. Between domestic and international mm-hmm. investments. And there's a phenomenal amount of revenue internationally, China, Russia, Poland, Vietnam, Israel, Australia. They have international investments scattered all over the globe. And in fact, their best rates of return were from third world countries, initially Mexico, and then they sank money into the Soviet bloc countries, and most recently in the last 12, 13 years, China.
And Walter, this is not the most frightening part. As you have explained on numerous occasions, that $110 trillion isn't just sitting there. This $110 trillion basically invests in, to put it politely,
right.
But we're talking about fascism of the highest order, because the bottom line is when you look at the stockholders of the mega anything, bank whatever,
mm-hmm.
it's the government.
Right. And you'll have government shills saying, oh, that's not true. The government doesn't own any corporation. Government doesn't do it. Yeah, I mean, the public just sits there going, oh, it must not be true. I heard it on the internet. It was in this blog post. No one takes the time to sit there with their calculator, pulling up a few of the reports and start adding up. When you start adding totals, yeah, I mean, you're blown away. Clint Richardson, one of my proteges, I kind of briefed for about 2 years. You know, he took the ball and ran with it, and he did a good video. I think it was called the Pension Fund Hoax.
Mm-hmm.
But he just targeted Apple and Microsoft, I think it was, and started adding up, you know, from the different, say, top 200 different pension fund, government pension fund reports.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very quickly, you know, 3%, 5%, 10%, 15%, you start seeing, you know, how quickly government ownership starts adding up if you start targeting different specific companies. And you look at industry groups, the pharmaceutical companies and so forth, healthcare, all heavily invested in by government.
Right.
So their policies that they create, you know, Obama's healthcare bill.
Mm-hmm.
The syndicated media came out with a comment which was half of the truth, but at least it was half. Usually it's none. When the Obama healthcare bill passed, the networks were saying, and the pharmaceutical companies will be the big winners up here. Their profits are going to soar, and the insurance companies. They're going to have less liability and mandate more payments to them. Their profits are going to soar, and that's where they stopped. Now, if they had gone on to say, and by the way, collective government owns the majority of the pharmaceutical companies by investment, and the insurance company, they're the number one investors, their government's profits are going to soar. So what they did was created a healthcare plan which guaranteed them, you know, with funneling a few trillion in, the largest percentage of the profit came back to their own investment funds. Do you follow?
Oh, do I ever? And there's another piece of this, too, that is not entirely financial, but equally outrageous, which, of course, when they passed this insane law, they said on multiple occasions, and the groups we're setting up will not include any representatives from the pharmaceutical or health industry. And on the one hand, I thought, oh, good, they'll have it populated with people who don't know what they're talking about. But by the same token, it's going to be populated with bureaucrats. So how can you possibly say that they don't have an interest in the pharmaceutical industry? Who the hell are the investors?
It all boils down to the money. It always is boiled down to the money and the wealth and the wealth transfer. Last 10,000 years, I mean, people keep asking me, say, Walter, when did this all start? Federal Reserve, was it this bill, that bill? And I'd always say, no, I went back a little further than that. I went back to the caveman days. There was this caveman who had a beautiful cave on a cliff overlooking the beach. I mean, beautiful panoramic view. And one day, this other caveman who lived, you know, back in the swamp, you know, not too nice area of town, comes knocking on it, pounding on his front door, going, I just found 500 herd beasts. I captured 20 of them. I'm going to have meat for the next 2 or 3 years. Do you want some? Do you want to catch some? The guy goes, yeah, where are they? He goes, let me draw you a map. Over that mountain, make a left at that canyon, make a right at that canyon, go down to the end of the canyon, and they're all herded down there. So the guy grabs the map, grabs his rope, goes over that mountain, makes a left at that canyon, makes a right at that canyon, goes down to the end of the canyon, and he finds 5 ravenous saber-toothed tigers who promptly eat him for lunch. And then the other caveman's standing at his front door saying, hey, now I got a place for the view.
Right.
That's when it started.
Yeah, I think that
well refined. I mean, yeah. There's more money coming in through government than Midas ever dreamed about on the city level, county level, state level. And if you asked, if you polled 10,000 people in California, Florida, New York, New Jersey, okay, who's constantly complaining about their city, their county, their school district taking more money, more money, more money, right?
Right.
If you asked them any one of the basic fundamental questions we know about our own personal lives every single day of our life, like, well, how much cash did they bring in last year? They'd say, no idea. Take a guess. I can't. Why? Don't have a clue. What about their investment totals? No idea. Take a guess. I can't. Why? Don't have a clue. What about their net worth? No idea. Take a guess. I can't. Why? Don't have a clue. And keep in mind those basic points. We know since we're little kids, up until when we die, we keep how much cash we brought in, cash in our pocket, value of our investments, you know, rough idea of what our net worth is. It's in the back of our mind every day of our lives. Here, in government, they've created an intentional vacuum and void in the cognitive thinking of an entire population due to the money and control involved. And keep in mind, they held back their annual financial report for 65, 70 years. And, you know, that's a hard feat to do. They needed the full cooperation of the syndicated media, controlled education, both political parties, to make sure, not a peep, not a mention, not a word. So all of those groups were sent copies for the last 45 years. They were included in on the loop. The only one who was excluded was one small little tiny group called the entire population of the United
yes,
States.
The general public, yes. Yes, just a
yeah,
few
so
hundred
had,
million.
Right, so you had many eager players. You had these massive investment funds building up, everyone's project corporations, takeover acquisitions could be sponsored. So you had, you know, the full cooperation of the Fortune 500 companies, banks, brokerage houses, insurance companies, because this was their bread and butter. As the more money grew within government, the more money was passed around by investment through their operations or organizations. Now, one of the little tactics government did to bypass their own monopoly laws, as I mentioned, there's many local governments. Let's say in New York, the city of Brooklyn, the management team goes, hey, you know, we have a whole bunch of investments in stocks and everything else, bonds. Why don't we team up with the you know, city of Manhattan, the state of New York, all the different counties in New York, and we'll pool our monies and we can control the marketplace. Well, if they did that internally, that'd be a slight tad bit of a problem, very obvious on the monopoly aspect. So what they did, you know, starting back in 1946, was the, you know, the big government gang boys got together and they started their own private association. One of the first ones was GFOA, Government Financial Officers Association.
Mm-hmm.
Nice little government-sounding acronym, 100% private association. They're at GFOA.org.
Right.
Well, that's the group, and by the way, out of Chicago, go figure. But they're the first ones that started pitching the annual financial report accounting structure for local governments. They put one word on the beginning, calling it a comprehensive annual financial report. And by, let's see, 1951, you know, first large entity, Manhattan, came on board. And by 1976, over half of the local governments were completing a comprehensive annual financial report. And they, in 77, they made it mandatory for all other local governments to produce an annual financial report to standardize accounting. But in the process, you know, here they were promoting selectively created budget reports, which is the only thing the public was spoon-fed,
right,
which showed where tax revenue was spent and allocated, but not a mention of the investment funds, enterprise income, or anything else, which would be shown on the annual financial report. And sounds like you're going to commercial break.
I am here in a moment, and one of the things I want to grapple with next, because clearly they've got control. They've got the bucks, we don't doubt it. They've got the control, we know it. So now, as we watch problems in the economy, which may at some point be beyond their control, what moves will they be making? So we'll.
I've been watching what the so-called promoted problems, and every single one of them had to do with theft that took place on an organized level. Swipe big chunks of the population as well.
We will pick it up right there. Walter Burian, CAFR1.com. I've got a link at Raleigh.net. You can believe every word of this, and the nice part about it is if you doubt it, just get online. It's all there. You want to know about the GFOA? They don't lie about it. Yeah, what's interesting is it is hiding in plain sight, and the indictment there is on the general public. Pick it up next on The Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show. Out of her car and on your radio, it's the Empress of the Interstates, Raleigh James.
Yeah, first I look at the purse. Well, interesting that Americans don't. Again, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is hiding in plain sight. The first person to bring it to our attention, and this is a long time ago now, is Walter Burian, who joins me this hour. CAFR1.com will get you all the information. How long ago is it that you first discovered this, Walter?
I started National Disclosure in June of 98. Had some limited disclosure back in New Jersey in 1990. And, you know, the wall fell down on me. You know, the boys don't like it when you rattle their cage. I had 14 points appear on my driver's license, a few point credit dates were moved around, and pip, instant suspension. One of my good buddies, Larry Lynch, on Downtown Printing, he was very active politically and did about $3 million in printing for the county. He was one of my primary backers. He got a few phone calls. Larry, keep helping out Walter. You just may lose those printing contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I said, time to leave New Jersey. My birth name is Bubien, B-U-B-I-E-N. I changed one letter to Burian, B-U-R-I-E-N, moved to Prescott, Arizona. Didn't let anyone know where I went to, stayed off the grid, you know. Never used my Social Security number at the time, and everything was working great. And started a small...
Uh-oh. We have lost Walter. I hear Walter...
Can you hear
there you are. Now you're back. All of a sudden, you just disappeared.
Must be Homeland Security at working in. But
probably
I had a patent
is.
That... I had a patent I had filed, and I had a press release and let everyone know where I was. And 1 month later, the rug got pulled out from under me, and has been pulled out at every available time since then.
You know what's interesting, Walter, is obviously they're concerned, and I remember years and years ago in the 90s hearing you on John and Ken on Jersey 101.5, and at the time they were very worried, the government and the people whose names we don't know, what this disclosure might do. And as you know over the years, they needn't have worried because the general public is still not remotely where they should be about being aware, let alone being enraged about what this game is about.
The greatest effort is made for not a mention, not a peep, not a word. The silence is golden routine has been played out for over 70 years due to the money involved.
Right.
I mean, if you're married to somebody for 50 years and you always thought, say your husband was a saint and he goes to the Boy Scouts three times a week. He volunteers at the church two times a week. Helps out all the charities, right? And someone comes to you saying, well, he hasn't been going to his Boy Scout meetings for the last 20 years, and he hasn't really helped out, gone to any of those church meetings. And he's basically, you know, running around with every other girl in town. You know, number one, you'd be shocked. Number two, you wouldn't believe the person telling you. And it would take quite a bit, you know, for them to... prove
you're right.
That was true, even if you gave them the ability to try to prove it. You know, most would just block it off. They wouldn't even want to know, even if they had an inkling that it was true, especially if they
right.
thought their spouse was a saint over so many decades.
Well,
but, you know, when you talk about this type of money involved,
yeah.
Now, Los Angeles County, you know, I looked at their account for back when L.A. City was crying bankrupt. Their normal operating budget for the year was $17.5 billion. Okay, their total collective liquid investment assets was about $325 billion. Okay, so if you took you know, the Bill Gateses, the old, you know, top 15 wealthiest people in this country, okay, they wouldn't have as much as L.A. County government has. It's big money. And, you know, they're employing hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of people. And most government employees are getting, you know, better paychecks than the average worker in the United States. But when you look at the investment assets, the wealth, keep in mind, even on a county level, if they have, you know, 40, 50, 60, 100 million, or city level, 40, 60, 70, 100 million, small city, sitting aside as idle funds, where those monies are invested, you know, is a lot of grease on the skids, period. And if the public is clueless, I mean, you can cut deals under the table, until hell freezes over, getting a perk here, a perk there, building up your wealth base for retirement, from the little deals you cut behind closed doors. Now, if the public's being masterfully entertained off in la-la land, intentionally so, it makes it that so much easier. Even with the public looking, you know, the politicians play the dumb routine. Oh, I don't know anything about that. I'll have to look into it. And, you know, my favorite story I like to tell since I started disclosure, it was about 2 years into the disclosure, I got a call from a woman from Pennsylvania. She was a wealthy cattle rancher.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I just talked to my good friend, the congressman. I spent $240,000 on his election, you know, personally, mm-hmm. she did,
right.
To get him elected.
Right.
And I told him about this, and he's absolutely furious. He said he's never heard of it before, but he's going to get to the bottom of it. I said, oh, really? I said, I'm going to make a call to the mailroom department of Treasury in Pennsylvania. You know, just listen in. Don't say anything. She goes, okay. Excuse me. So I get the, person from the mailroom on. I said, is Congressman so-and-so been getting the comprehensive annual financial report? She goes, oh, yeah. For how long? 11 years we've been sending it to him. And where did you send it to? His office? Yeah. And then I loved her for volunteering this information. She goes, oh, except for 3 years ago, he was on vacation, and he had his aide call us to have it sent to him down there in the Bahamas so he wouldn't miss it. Well, I would have loved to have tape recorded the next call this woman had with her good friend, the congressman. Yeah. You know, you YMP today.
Yeah.
And, bottom line was, he played that little routine out, and, she admit, how many people are going to call to find out if he was sent the report? One out of 1,000?
Not even that. This is obviously systemic, which makes it much harder to combat on any level because it is fully entrenched. But when we look at something like Detroit, because they've taken the move now that they've filed in a court that they're bankrupt. So with that in mind, is there any way for a friend of the court or someone else to enter the CAFR in this case, because what they're presenting is not this.
They'll use the CAFR in their bankruptcy themselves. But just a little continuation from before we went on break. You know, GFOA was the group in 1946 that started promoting the CAFR.
Right.
When it became the standard, as of 1977, and other local governments were noticed to go on the same accounting principles. GFOA was getting a little antiquated. And they wanted to create this new players, new power bases. They wanted to create another group which, would be more formidable. And the new group that took over the accounting principles of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report was called GASB, Government Accounting Standards Board. And GASB called all of the accounting principles in the CAFR and, sent out transmittal letters that they wanted to make a change to all local governments. Well, in 98, 99, when I came out with national disclosure, first 3 months I did like 130 radio programs. Oops.
Right.
Silence is golden routine has been broken. GASB, starting with transmittal letter 31, up to about 90-something now, they, in 99, when they sent out the first one, they started modifying the CAFR from a showing of gross income, gross standing balances, to a showing of net income and net standing balances. Now, anyone who runs a business knows there's a real big difference between net and gross.
Well, and, yeah. Are you telling me then, because when you say that, is there no other report that is filed that's showing gross?
That's correct. They modified it because people were now looking. Yeah, so say, for example, a local government had $100 billion, right, in liquid investment assets, but then they created $110 billion in advanced liabilities.
Right, see, that's what I'm saying here, what we were saying at the opening of the show with Detroit. The advanced liabilities, they can use it for a decade or two decades against the gross and make it a very negative picture. Well, so what you're telling me now that's really frightening to me is there really is no more comprehensive annual financial report that matters. If we can't see the gross anywhere, we don't know the story.
Right, well, I tell people now it's very important to look through the notes to the financial section. You know, say, for example, a school district had a fund. This is an example.
Right.
A school district has a fund to build two elementary schools.
Right.
And they project the cost will be $10 million. Well, if the fund balance was sitting at $12 million, okay, the net balance is $2
million. Mm-hmm.
$10 million goes towards the liability for building the two schools, so the fund has $2 million net. So they could actually get away with reporting that on their combined financial columns. Fund balance, $2 million. You'll see on every one of the pages, these are net figures, net figures, net figures. You know, 99 and before, you wouldn't see these are net on any one of the pages. They were showing the gross. But in the notes to the financial section, it would say, well, we've established a fund to build two schools. The fund balance is currently $12 million. Our liability to build schools is $10 million. So our net standing balance is $2 million in excess.
All right. Will
liabilities.
Will the notes in all cases reveal the gross that way?
It's like saying if your husband's cheating on you 20 times a week.
Yeah, right.
If you catch three occasions, does it show all 20? No, it's a start.
All right, so...
One quick notation. I thought of an analogy which I've been telling people for probably about 6 months now, but it really impacts everyone. Now, you know, there's a lot of Catholics out there, so I use the Catholic example. Say, for example, you know, way back when, after Jesus died, I mean, he's gone for 20 or 30 years. The Roman Catholic Church starting up, you know, 100, 150, 200 years later, but they discovered in their old, the Bible, you know, the compilation of the Bible, mm-hmm. in the passages, there was hidden clues to phenomenal hoards of wealth
mm-hmm.
buried all around the globe, okay? It was encrypted in the language, encrypted in the passages, right? And, you know, the Pope, the bishops, and everybody else decided, well, we better keep this to ourselves and, you know, let's decipher and find where these global treasures are. We don't want to start pitching the Bible to our, you know, constituents, you know, where they may figure it out. So picture if the Catholic Church never once mentioned the Bible, okay, and 2,000 years goes by. They never mentioned the Bible. They kept it as an internal document. Well, if I met someone who said they were a devout Christian, right,
mm-hmm.
and I said, would you like to see a copy of the Bible? They'd say, what's that? Well, it's actually what your entire religion is based on. What are you talking about? I said, well, here, take a look. The person starts flipping through the pages. Well, what's this have to do with my religion? I see names like Peter, Paul, Simon, Jesus, Judas. Who are these guys? What do they have to do with my religion? You know, if it was held back, never a mention, never a peep, never a word. You know, a Catholic would never hear the Bible, and they would have no idea what it meant or what passages were in it. Yeah, but in reality, you know, the Catholic Church talks about the Bible nonstop and is mentioned 20 times in every service, and, you know, people have been picking up little bits by little bits all their lifetime that are Christians. You know, same thing with the Muslims, Buddhists, and everybody else, you know, what their teachings are and their scripts. So the comprehensive annual financial report or annual financial report or statement of net worth for your local government is their holy grail of accounting, the equivalent of the Bible for the Catholic Church. But in that analogy, you know, where there was massive wealth involved, they kept it. They kept it to themselves, intentionally, due to the wealth that was building and contained therein. And then when people started looking in 98, 99, they had a lock on it up until, 99. And when people started looking, was that, oh, my God, moment. What's about to hit the fan. And GSB immediately started putting out transmittal letters, on the changing and modifying from gross to net. Now, Gerald Klatt, who I briefed in the end of 99, he was a retired federal auditor of 30 years, mm-hmm. CIA trained, FBI trained, he was commander of auditing for the Air Force, last 15 years over the contracts they had with the 8 southern and western states between the Air Force and local governments. Now, he reviewed CAFRs on the individual basis, as a normal procedure. But I called him and briefed him on the aspect of collective totals, looking at the forest instead of a tree or leaf or branch in the forest.
Right.
And I briefed him on the specialty investment funds where massive amounts of money were stashed away.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he would look into it. 3 months later, he called me back and he goes, Walter, what we have here in this country is 100% communism under the guise of a free market capitalist system. The government owns and controls everything. And they're, And I said, you're a federal auditor of 30 years, retired. I said, why don't you start a website and start doing CAFR reviews for surplus reviews? 6 months later, he launched CAFRman.com.
Mm-hmm.
CAFRman.com, CAFRman.
Sure. Right.
They started doing surplus reviews of the different states and so forth. He lived in Tucson, Arizona, so he also did a few counties in Arizona, the main primary cities, Tempe, Phoenix, Scottsdale and so forth. And, I try to promote his site as much as possible. And, keep in mind, he's a 30-year federal auditor. I mean, you're talking about 100% credibility, 100% knowledge, and somebody, who he says this, it's 100% true, backed by, his accounting experience.
Yeah.
So, now, in 2000, and, well, this is an important point. He got a site up in 2000, basically end of 2000. Then in 2004, July, 3 months, he died. Mysteriously. I still haven't figured out how he died, what were the circumstances. But 3 months before that, he introduced on his site a CAFR review program, an Excel, fill-in-the-blank spreadsheet. And he had created one for a school district, a city, a county, and a state. Well, that was the government boy's worst nightmare, because that opened it up to millions of people to pull up a application and fill-in-the-blanks. Oops.
Right.
Well, two and a half months later, he was dead. Now, I found out how he died in, he died in 2004. I found out in 2006. I got a call from his son, from his first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He could not find his father. And, I know you're close to my dad. Do you know where he is? Well, I said, I haven't talked to him in about 2 years, but I'll check in, so... his telephone number disconnected, the household, his website, all the old information. His son, from his second marriage, Skip Klatt, who he was living with, he was an attorney, and, he was registered in Arizona, so I checked Arizona, no longer registered, checked the United States, not registered in the United States, even checked Canada. Then I went to the Social Security Death Index.
Right.
And he died July 11th of 2004, which, by the way, was his birthday.
And what happened to Skip?
No idea. I've not been able to track him down. He's still around. He's not an attorney, but I know because...
Who is controlling CAFRman.com now? Because it's still up. It's not current, but it's still up.
It's up because I took intervention. In 2009... Yeah, I refer people to it all the time, and I kept track on it. being that I knew Gerald died. And 2009, the site went down. So I called the ISP, found out it went down for non-payment of, the annual,
right,
charge.
The fees, right.
So I offered, to pay that to get it back up. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't take the payment from me because it wasn't authorized by the contact person on the account, which I found out was, SkipClap.
Right.
And I said, could you please call him and tell him if he's not going to pay the fee, I will pay it. And 2 weeks later, the site went back up.
Okay.
So I guess he did get the message and he did pay for his father's site. And I said, it's really important that his father's work continues.
And it's still up there. So he's somewhere because it's still up there. And the information is as it was back before his death. Now, of course, I'm hogging you. And Mike from Phoenix has a question. So, Mike, welcome.
Good evening, Raleigh. Hello, Walter.
Hi, Mike.
Since you mentioned Arizona, what's your opinion on this corrupt little state?
Okay.
And maybe Phoenix in particular.
All right. Good questions, and thanks, Mike. So, Arizona?
On Arizona, I love the state. It's one of the most unique geographical territories on Earth. You can, be having a barbecue in your backyard in Phoenix and take a 2.5-hour drive up to Flagstaff and go skiing.
Right.
Yeah. You have the low deserts and you have the high, solidly dense pine forests. It's, a beautiful state. But if you look at Arizona, the growth aspect, from 83 to about 2008, the population doubled. So you've had this phenomenal boom. I was living in Prescott, Arizona, for about 10 years when I first moved to Arizona, 90 through 2000. And, I made a critical mistake there when I was there. I was doing a thing called the Money Manager's Verified Ratings. I was mm-hmm. the national sales manager, and one of our contestants was the publisher of Money Magazine. He had a $35 million fund with us. Well, I gave him this big pitch on how I looked all over the country, found Prescott, Arizona, best mm-hmm. place for me to retire, raise a family, and so forth. And he goes, Prescott, let's see. We do it once a year, best place to retire. And we published the top 100, and he looks, it was like number 165 on the list. And he takes it, puts it up at number one.
Jeez.
Right? And that year in Money Magazine, Prescott, the number one place to retire. Well, in the start of the exodus from California, Colorado, New York, New Jersey, Florida, all over the country, the population went from 14,000 to about 140,000 in the area within 5 years. And when you have that type of expansion, people would be selling their $3 million home in California and building the exact same for $1 million, up in Prescott. But it created a boom of money. And whenever you have a massive influx of money, the politicians, the most ruthless and the most corrupt, bid for the top dog spot to control that money. So just as much as Prescott was taken over by the most corrupt and the gang of the best exploiters, same thing in Arizona. And you'll, find at every turn of the page, you have the judges and the attorneys all networking together to create the game.
Yeah, so it's no different. It's no different, certainly, than
right.
most anywhere else. I got a couple more questions, so if you will hold on, I will ask them. Do you mind?
But Arizona is still one of the best states in the country. not based on the politics, but based on natural place.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Politically, it's always been an interesting entity, but I think when you get into the Kafirs, as you have, you discover that there's no great place. There's no escaping this. This is pervasive, and we're not only talking about the money they have that is unreported, but what they are investing in to the degree that they are, in fact, controlling it. And that's what's truly of great concern to anybody interested in liberty. But I want to tie that together and ask you a question. So if you don't mind hanging on, I'd appreciate it, Walter. All right. So Walter Burian, CAFR1, CAFR1.com.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
And while we're waiting, and we'll be back to Walter in a minute, a couple things I wanted to mention. One of them is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, dgscoins.com. This is Melody's company, and, you know, as you hear about the CAFRs and everything else, you start to wonder, is there anything real you can invest in anymore? I'm a great believer in gold and silver if you know what you're doing. I think that a lot of people have been taken for some amazing rides, but even in those cases, maybe they didn't get as much gold or as much silver, but they had something that had intrinsic value. The bottom line, though, is you want to get the most amount of gold for your money, and that requires you to know a few things, and the biggest of which is probably who to deal with. But whenever you buy precious metals, you're buying a commodity. It's a product. It's either going to be bullion, meaning the value is strictly how much gold is in it, or it's numismatic, meaning there's a collectible component, such as collectible coins and stuff. Everybody takes a commission. They're in business. They're not a charity. So when you hear deals that are too good to be true, they usually are. What you want is somebody who will tell you the truth, have the integrity to do that, and have the knowledge to know what they're talking about. And that's why I suggest Melody at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com, 800-375-4188. When you're looking at anything you can invest in, there aren't many where you can say, no matter what happens, the country falls apart, the economy goes to hell, the currency ceases to exist, gold, silver, precious metals will have value. So for that reason alone, having a certain amount of them in whatever portfolio you can amass is really worth it. It's insurance. It's not about what is the price of gold today. It's about, if everything goes to hell, do I have something that has value? So Discount Gold and Silver Trading, it's dgscoins.com, 800-375-4188, and you tell them Raleigh sent you. The other thing I wanted to mention, of course, is the Sea Crane Company. I say, of course, because I love this catalog. Bob Crane is just the best. He's so different from any other online marketer in that he's got a phone number, and they really answer it in-house. That's why I don't call them now. Operators are not standing by. You call the Sea Crane Company during the day. They pick up the phone in Fortuna, California, and they talk to you. They give you the kind of customer service that, well, went away long before the start of the Internet even evolved. Not only that, though, just up-to-the-minute products. And, of course, I'm always talking about the CC Wi-Fi, which is... I just consider it the best because it's such convenience. If you like to listen to shows online, sure, you can sit in front of your computer, but when you can listen on a radio, especially one that has buttons and knobs and a clock, an alarm, a timer, that makes it all the better, especially when you realize, unlike locally where you might have 30, 40 stations to choose in your area, assuming you live in a pretty large area, well, Wi-Fi radio, 16,000 and counting. Yeah, a lot more, actually, when you get right down to it. But you'll certainly find whatever it is you want to hear. If it's talk radio, political talk, or, heck, spiritual talk, you name it, it's there. Music, even obscure R&B oldies, beach music, entire channels. So thousands and thousands of stations from not only in America, around the entire globe for you to listen to anytime. Nothing better than the CC Wi-Fi to do that. It's $99.95. Great price and great features. It's got 5 presets on board, plus it's got a remote control with 99 presets. And, you know, normally I'd say you won't fill them up, but, hey, with over 16,000 from which to choose, you might. So this will open the world to you like nothing else has. If you've been lamenting, there's not a listen to on the radio anymore, well, there sure is online. You know that if you're listening to this show, but why not make it easy and listen to everything? The CC Wi-Fi. You can go to ccrane.com and take a look at it. There's a link right on Raleigh.net, R-O-L-L-Y-E.net, or you can give them a call. They'll be back tomorrow. Whenever you get up, they'll be in the office. 888-444-7993. That's 888-444-7993. If you mention James on the phone, or if you use the coupon code James on your order online, you get 5% discount off your entire shopping order. So that's neat too. ccrane.com, 888-444-7993. Got to check out that Wi-Fi radio and everything else too. You'll find something you got to have. You tell them Raleigh sent you. Please, baby, please don't.
give my heart a full arm. You look more that I love you. Love, love, love you so.
Paranoid to the max. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RAWLEIGH.
It's not a false alarm. It is the real deal. The Comprehensive Annual Financial Report will give you a clue to what the government is really sitting on. And I say a clue because the thing that has just really opened my eyes on this conversation is that since 99, we're not getting the gross figures. Neither is anybody else, of course. Walter Bury and the man responsible for bringing this to the public's attention. And as far as I'm concerned, Walter, you'll go down in history for that. And we all thank you. But here's my big question here, because let's take a look at the economy. And as you say, a lot of it is manufactured by government positions and outright theft. But at this,
did you ever go fishing, Raleigh?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one of the little tactics you can do is, as you're fishing on one end of the pond, you throw rocks in the other end of the pond.
Right.
Drives the fish towards you.
Right.
Well, in the marketplace, in cooperation with the syndicated media, they promote, different scenarios. You get all the minnows schooling to one end of the pond, then the sharks feast, and then they school them back to the other end of the pond, and then the sharks feast. So, the population, has always been treated as minnows, being schooled by the sharks so the sharks can feast.
Right.
And when you have, government running the majority of the investment show now, they do a very excellent job of schooling the minnows back and forth, and they're getting extremely fat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you betcha that's true. By the way, that's a perfect example of why not to invest in the stock market.
Can I sidetrack for one second?
Sure.
I was listening to your commercials, the first commercial you had on gold and silver and so forth. I wanted to make one comment where, it'd be beneficial for that group. And I guarantee you, every one of your listeners right now, if they listen and catch the words I'm about to say, I'll get big hugs and kisses from the majority, and in the alternative, I don't think anyone's going to really want to give me a kick, because I think I'm 100% right on the mark here, and it means a substantial amount of money for people. I was a commodity trading advisor for 14 years at an international news line, primarily on silver and U.S. Treasury bonds from the World Trade Center back in 78, 79. But the, gold, I know the whole story on the gold. That's a whole other show.
Right.
And, I follow silver, and last couple of years I called the exact highs and exact lows back and forth. I put out a little market rants email newsletter, from Camphor One. I have it documented, calling the exact highs and lows and giving the projections what to expect. But here's the big point. Gold is priced by the ounce. Silver is priced by the ounce. Copper is priced by the pound.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very near future, it could be 2014, I think, the boys are going to push through for copper, as prices start, spiraling up again.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to push for copper to be priced by the ounce.
Oh, no.
Instead of by the pound. And when they do that, the second it starts, from the very first day when it's priced by the ounce, you'll see a double in price within a very short period of time.
Oh,
being priced in.
And
okay.
What I'm thinking by the way, is for anybody who's been a broadcaster, there goes the AM ground systems. You're going to see thefts like you've never seen them before.
Right. But, here's the key point. I recommended to a few of my inside people that kept asking me about silver and gold. I said, no, buy copper. And I checked around to see if it was being sold in ingots and so forth. It was. But everyone selling it was marking it up 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if the price per pound was $4 a pound, they were selling it for $8 a pound,
right?
And which is totally unacceptable. Now, I searched around the country. I found there was a copper mine in Nevada, a large copper producer, which they would sell, buy, 5 pound, 10 pound, or larger bars. 999 fine copper, but to get a good price where they only marked up 1.5%,
mm-hmm.
Which is excellent. yeah, probably 30,000 pounds
right.
of copper.
Shipping's a bitch.
Yeah, so I told my contacts they should start a little pool between the guys and then pick up 30,000 pounds.
Yeah.
But that would be my suggestion.
Okay. Copper.
For people. Yeah, and to your first advertiser to offer copper.
She may.
Bullion bars.
Yeah, she absolutely may. I don't know.
It's essential. They don't try to charge 100% markup, but
that's the beauty of Melody. She doesn't.
Yeah, 10%, 10%, maybe 12% is reasonable. You know, keep in mind, gold and silver is marked up probably about 2-3% by the big dealers.
Right,
so,
but you're dealing with much bigger prices, of course, so that 3% is a lot more gain realized. But let me go back to this again here, because here's where I am, and this is more to do probably with sociology than economics. But at this point in time, with robotics, with, of course, outsourcing and everything else, but with all of the technological and sociological changes, we have a lot more people then there are jobs needed to be performed. So it's
correct.
Like it's musical chairs. This is the first time we really have the useless eaters that the elite used to complain about. So economically speaking, assuming that there's not a great plague coming, this is going to be totally upside down and in the not too distant future in the scheme of things. So
there's one little pointer there. I've never used that word useful eaters, it's actually probably offensive to quite a few people. But keep in mind, government owns the marketplace. I mean, it's like
correct.
Russia. Russia used to promote, we own everything, we will take care of you, and
they don't need the people anymore. What do you do then?
The point I was trying to make, it's one of those 1+1=2 equations, which most people are totally oblivious to. But they're paying out these, billions of dollars in food stamps, billions of dollars in welfare payments and everything else. What doesn't equate in the public's mind, the reason they're so liberal on that is these people now spend the money back into the economy.
Right.
Right? Which they then guarantees them a steady performance on their return on the ownership of the companies and products and so forth.
Sure
you
does.
Follow?
Oh, I follow big time, but when you're in a different percentage, I understand that. But what's happening now is the equation is getting so lopsided. There are so many more on the public dole, and they seem to be, and I don't know if it's by design.
But government doesn't care about that as far as, that money goes right back to them. It's being spent by these people on the dole, and, it just cycles right back into government. Guarantees them a good rate of return on their investments. But the key point when you say what's going to happen, here's the critical point to look at. A few years ago, I heard about a polar shift taking place.
Right.
And, I saw a lot of stories flying around the Internet. Well, I always like to verify anything, period. I don't like being used as a useful idiot, being promoted some storyline. Excuse me. So I went to the NASA site, and NASA had, a section for the polar shift.
Right.
And at that point, it had already moved 8%, 8 degrees. And, there were stories about how all the airline companies and all the airports, they had to keep changing their GPS readings because the planes were coming in on pre-programmed landing.
Right.
Via GPS and satellite. Well, with the shift, the measurements were off, and planes were landing, 10 feet over on the runway,
right.
Possibly off. So they had to come up with a scheme to update all of the airports and all of the planes' GPS readings to keep everybody on track as the shift took place. Now, when this kind of hit the mainstream, the NASA website was gagged, and they had to delete their section on it, and they have not reported on it since. Well, bottom line there is, no one alive today, when I say alive today in the last couple thousand years, has experienced a polar shift, magnetic shift, where the North Pole becomes the South Pole, the South Pole becomes the North Pole, and we have a flip on the axis. And even though it happens every, 30,000, 35,000 years or so, and it's happened many times in the past, But when it does, you have massive earthquakes, you have massive tsunamis, you have, I mean,
right.
The continental plates move, all at once, in a very short period of time. Now, they didn't know how long it took. Did it take 100 years, 200 years? Based on the percentage that has moved so far, it looks like it takes place in about 8 to 9 years.
We're guessing, and obviously. Magnetic pole, which you're talking about with regard to the airlines and stuff, it's been moving more rapidly, that's true. I think about 40 miles a year. And so there are a number of people who think there will be a pole reversal, but that is still a hypothesis. Do you really think that
it is happening. It is happening.
So
as
do
I
you,
mentioned, NASA confirmed it back 4 years ago on their site, and then they were gagged not to say a word.
Well, right. But
and now, here's the scary point. You know, then you come out with reports, Homeland Security buys 240 million rounds of ammunition.
Yes.
For what, deer hunting? Yeah. Then you have these massive grave, cemetery sites being built off in obscure places all across the country to handle 1, 2, 3, 4 million people. You have a stockpiling of body bags and quick coffins all over the country. They're not going to prepare for it unless they prepare for something where they would need those items unless they knew they're going to need them.
Well,
so people should be very concerned, of what's going to transpire in the next 2 to 3 years. The big concern I have is 2015. I've always been able to project ahead. Ever since I was a kid, I'd be able to project ahead in the future and just the mind would race away 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 100 years. Last couple of years, when I project ahead, I run into a brick wall in 2015. Everything stops. Void. Blackness. Vacuum. Nothing. And that's been scaring the crap out of me for the last 2 years. And I haven't quite put my finger on why that is. I figure either I'm going to be dead in 2015 or everything is going to be stopped in 2015.
Well,
they cannot brief. They can't brief the population. You'd have mass panic. You'd have looting, pillaging, killing, and everyone for themselves,
Well,
and you'd have total breakdown in all societies.
Of course you would. But again, when this will happen or how it will happen, that's where the conjecture comes in. We know that the pole is shifting and about 40 miles a year. And we know that they're not telling us that, yes, the FAA has been renaming runways and such because of degrees on compasses that are changing. But beyond that, again, it's a hypothesis as to whether this will be a polar shift. But if it is, they don't need bullets, and they don't need the 2,700 light armor tanks that they've ordered because we're gone.
It doesn't happen in one day. It happens over months, if not a year or two. And, as it starts happening, you start having major events happening, and the public finally, oh, my God, this is actually real.
Well,
this is happening. That's when you have the true panic and you have the true breakdown in society, and that's what they would need it for.
The reason I say we're overdue is, as you know, if you've studied this, it's been 780,000 years since the last flip. So certainly we're overdue, but I've never tried to imagine that we know how this will occur. But are you thinking that their intel is telling them it's going to occur over years rather than an instant swap and that we better be prepared and better be ready? This is interesting because we don't have to worry much about Obamacare now, based on your theory. The CAFRs go out the window with this.
It's business as usual until it's mandated and enforced, where it can't be business as usual.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mention something I want you to take with a grain of salt. But, watch very closely around August 17th.
Of this year? Okay.
Just right around the corner.
A couple of weeks away, August 17th.
10 days or so. You know.
Okay, I'll write this down. Because, I mean, if the big change is coming on August 17th, there's no reason to vacuum or do laundry. So, you know, I'll delay.
Well, one of the other issues is we're going to be passing through some pretty big asteroid belts and a few other things. But
that actually does scare me. Not so much the asteroids. What scares the hell out of me is the idea that we'll have some type of a pulse bomb, an EMF problem, where it wipes our electronics.
Well, somebody asked me what I thought of Arizona, but watch the news regarding a little judgment from the sky falling
on August 17th. Wow. Well, this is interesting. Usually, we end on an interesting note, but you've outdone yourself, Walter. But so, what I want to do? Are you available to talk to us on? I don't even know what day of the week the 17th is, but are you available to talk to us on that, or do you have? That would be a Tuesday, actually, 2 weeks from today.
Well,
no, that's September. Never mind. But go ahead.
I'm on high ground, so.
Okay.
I'll probably be safe.
Wait, but the 17th is a Saturday. Oh, dear. Okay, for August, it's a Saturday.
Keep in mind, in Arizona, there's a thing called Meteor Crater.
Right.
Which is a little bit east on I-40 from Flagstaff. That was about a 500 foot or so.
All right, well.
Across meteor that hit, and it took out everything within quite a few miles when it hit. The crater itself is 3 miles across, but there were deposits of rock that was thrown out, humongous, like acres worth of rock that they found from that impact 110 miles away.
Okay. All right, well, then I'd like to book Monday the 19th of August so we can see what happens.
Well, one note on the CAFR, though. Make sure everyone goes to CAFRman.com, takes a look. He has reviews, on the left-hand side of his front page.
Yes.
But there's a link right in the center of the front page that says the review process. And he just breaks it down how easy it is. They like to make their CAFRs about 200 pages thick to befuddle everyone. But what he does is, he says basically, it all boils down to about 20 pages. In the CAFR to look at, and then he tells you what to look for and what line items and so forth. And his reviews that he shows, stop in 2003, meaning that he died in 2004. I would get calls nonstop from people saying, "Oh, Gerald Clutt, he's so rude. He doesn't return my emails." And so forth. If I talk to him from the resurrection, I'll make sure he calls you.
Right.
But, people are always constantly, give me, take. If I died tomorrow, people would be saying, who do we call in the CAFR now?
Well, that's true.
What I've done, I've lost my family, my business. I've been attacked nonstop for almost 15 years. I had my son ripped out of my arms twice. I haven't seen him in 8 years. I have 3 children. They dangle the abuse of them, indoctrinate them. These guys do not play fair. And, the biggest question I always have is, Walter, how come you're still walking, talking, and breathing? And they don't have a clue as to the extent of what I've been going through. But when I first came out with National Disclosure in June of 98, 2 months later, the first hit was tried on me. They sent someone in from San Diego. And... my local pub, the Birdcage Saloon, I was out, one night. Yeah. And keep in mind, I grew up in New Jersey. I was kind of one of the Jersey boys and I have that sixth sense. Plus, I've been a fighter most of my lifetime, boxing, wrestling, judo, karate. And I walked in and I caught that, the hawk swooping down on the rabbit glance from somebody. And I made it a point to sit down next to the person at the bar, started chatting with them, told them what... government was doing. I told them what they had done to my children, my family, the witnesses, and so forth, and gave them the full brief. And he looked over and he goes, you know who I am, don't you? I said, yeah. He goes, well, they offered me $15,000. They paid me $7,500 up front. I'm telling him I'm going back to San Diego. I'm giving him back $7,500 and telling him I'm not coming back again. So that one was caught and handled. Then the local gang out of Prescott, judges and attorneys, tried to, local hits on me. One guy had gotten popped with an ounce and a half of methamphetamine, and he was facing a 3-year jail sentence. But guy from Wickenburg, Patrick. But he was offered probation and a couple of grand if I would disappear. So he tried to tag me when I was walking out of my place one morning when I was scheduled to go to court. I spotted him sneaking up behind my vehicle, you know, little green army coat, hand in his pocket, little snub-nosed 38. I kind of snuck around, went out behind my vehicle, came up from behind him. I said, "Can I help you?" "I'm here to lay down some pipe in the front yard, number 11. I said, "Oh, really?" Which I knew was 100% bull. And he turns around and goes, "You're Walter, aren't you?" I said, "No."
Yeah, exactly.
"But if you, got to lay down some pipe in number 11, go talk to the manager." You know, I pointed to her house. And he goes again, "You're Walter, aren't you?" I said, "No." But he starts pulling, you know, the gun out of his pocket. And I then got about 8 inches from his face. And, you know, I was, he was about 5'11". I'm 6'2". And, you know, effectively, if he had pulled that gun out or even shot through his coat, I would have snapped him in half before he hit the ground. So I got intimidating with him. I said, "Listen, you want to lay down some pipe in the front yard 11, go down and talk to the manager, you know, 6 inches from his face." Right. I intimidated him. He, you know, starts walking down towards his manager's place, and I'm hiding behind my van. Then I see him run to a Cadillac, jump into it to take off out of the place. I said, "No way am I going to let this guy get away without finding out who he was." Quick ran up to the side of his car, slapped the door. You know, he hit his brake. I flung his door open. I said, "Yeah, I am Walter. That is my place. And, you know, there's no pipe going down yet. Show me your driver's license so you can wait for the cops to get here." Well, I had this big German Shepherd, full-grown German Shepherd in the back seat of the Cadillac. And when I flung his door open, the Shepherd, you know, lunging out over the back seat. Well, I've been around dogs all my lifetime. I know dogs real quick, and I just turned around with a ferocious growl. I mean, you know, as loud as I could, right in the dog's face, and the thing just jumped back and pinned itself against the back seat and cramped on the back seat. Well, when he saw me do that to his dog, he quick reached into his wallet and pulled out his license, a Patrick Stanley from Wickenburg. And I went down to court, and there was a custody hearing. The ex, Robin, was there, and the judge, Bob Brutnell, was the number one string puller. He used to be the chairman of the Republican Party. I did a little test. I said, "Well, I'm sorry I'm late." I was about 5 minutes late. I said, "Someone was trying to break into my place, and I had to wait for a you know, police report you know, to be called in." No reaction. And then I said, "A Patrick Stanley." Second I said the name, both of them, their heads just shrunk down in their shoulders. They slowly looked at each other, back at me, back at each other again. I mean, it was unmistakable. Yeah. How did he get the name? You know, and then there was one other attempt a couple of months later. They sent in somebody from Payson, Arizona, to try to tag me, and I caught that one, found out who he was and who sent him.
And you're still here.
After those attempts, I passed the words in their circles. I said, "If there's another attempt, a fourth," I said, "the last words out of that person's mouth is who sent him, and the last words out of their mouth is who we're in cooperation with." So I triggered their survival instincts at that point.
Well, it's always fascinating, Walter, and I'm going to make it a point on the 19th to check back to see what happened on the 17th. But in the meantime, as always, thank you for keeping us informed about the KFERS.
But Raleigh, very important point. Just remember, there is no real law in this country. The population is being bled dry from the courts through tickets, fines, fees, taxation. It's one big organized racket, as the population is masterfully entertained to be off in La La Land. So business as usual.
I agree. Now, next time I'll prepare you. You can be thinking about it. I want to know what we can do about it. So until then, good luck on the 17th, and we'll talk to you on the 19th. Walter, thank you.
That'll be the TRF fund.
All right. Good deal. Thanks. And we'll pick it up right there in the final half hour. If you would like to call, I'd love it if you do. Yeah, not happy about anything Walter said, but it's things we need to know. And I'm still mad as hell about this congressional exemption to Obamacare. We'll pick it up there.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
You can give them to the birds and bees. I need money. That's what I want. I need money. Such
The Raleigh James Show. And for this, you're staying up late.
And I, for one, am glad about that. 610-640-6400 will do it to it. 610-640-6400. Not sure I know how to follow that. I wasn't expecting Walter getting into the end of the world. Yeah, the end of the world as we know it. Well, I guess then it doesn't really matter about the Kafer, does it? Well, man, I tell you what. Although all that said, it is important that you understand just how much money the government of all branches and all locations and all sizes is sitting on. And I was not aware, I don't know how I missed it, that the comprehensive annual financial reports no longer had the gross dollars since 99. Even so, I would assume that you read enough of those reports, you'll start to see what kind of money we're talking about. Truly a fright. Now, before I get back to the Obamacare exemption, which is just driving me crazy, I'm very upset about the family of a firefighter that was killed in the Arizona wildfire in Prescott, denied lifetime benefits. Now, this is a tough story, and when I first read the beginnings of it, I thought to myself, well, it's sad, but he's not entitled. I've changed my mind, and not he, of course, his family. This is Deborah Pfingsten's 29-year-old son, Andrew Ashcraft, died June 30th, along with 18 other members of Granite Mountain Hotshots that we had talked about at the time. Mom and wife are both very upset at the fact that the family will not be receiving a lifetime of benefits. Now, full-time employees get lifetime benefits to help raise children. In this case, Andrew leaves four children. And Julianne, his widow, says she's thinking of filing a lawsuit. Now, again, so far, I'm thinking, well, but I guess he wasn't full-time. By the way, every one of the families gets $328,000 from the federal government. But the 13 seasonal employees who were out of the 19 total, 13 of them were seasonal, they're not entitled to the same benefits that the six full-time employees have. All right, so they are not entitled to what is amounting to millions and millions of dollars. Now, it's interesting that the city officials say, well, we can't change that posthumously, we've complied with all the laws and all the employment, and in fact, one of the things they said, which I thought was really a shot, is when she said, I didn't know he wasn't a full-time employee, they said, perhaps there was a communication issue in your marriage. Okay, now so far it sounds pretty bad, right? Except that Andrew was a full-time employee. He went to work full-time. He worked 40 hours a week. He worked all year long. But due to glitches and all that, this goes back to all the shenanigans that Walter talks about in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports and stuff. Due to glitches, this guy was classified as a seasonal employee. Now, he's there every day. He's showing up 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, a couple weeks of vacation, that's it. Yeah, that's when the story really turned for me. This was not a part-time worker. This was not a seasonal worker, regardless of how they are trying to classify him. And I hope that of the other 13 who are not considered to be full-time out of the 19, if these 13, quote-unquote, seasonal employees are working every season of the year, then Prescott needs to belly up and pay them. All right. But, oh, Walter has joined us again for one last comment. Let's hear it, Walter.
Raleigh, I forgot to mention the most important thing in the conversation.
Yes.
We were just on. Number one, Raleigh James is priceless. I've done about 650 radio programs. You ace it as number one. And
thank you.
I've known tens of thousands of people in my lifetime. And the people I would consider timeless, I can count on my hand. You're one of those people. I would consider you timeless, very sharp, and you, you're priceless.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to make sure I snuck that one in before I went to sleep for the night. And by the way, that August 17th.
Yes, Saturday.
Date. You marked down a time, 7:15 p.m. Arizona time.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, we're still talking no daylight savings time, so that's equivalent to Pacific time. That would be 10:15 East Coast time. All right. Well, will we be able to talk to you on Monday the 19th, or will you have crossed over?
No, I think I'll still be here, but you have a great week there, Raleigh, and it was an absolute pleasure being on your show again.
Thank you so much, Walter. Talk to you soon.